Right. Thank you, Michel. And thanks to the organizers for putting on a good show and letting me to participate. So I'd like to tell you about what may well be the simplest experiment you can imagine with granular materials. Take a ball, drop it into a bucket of sand, and ask, how far does it penetrate? Penetration depth, little d. And what's the size of the crater? dc. How does that scale with the properties of the ball, the projectile? How does it vary with the drop height and the properties of the granular material itself? What could be simpler? So this is work that's been carried on for a number of years by the folks up there. Basically, each one had their own individual piece of the project to work on, and we'll take you through that. So why impact cratering? Well, it's simple, okay? It's it's a real problem, okay? We actually care about how far things might penetrate into sand. It has obvious applications, and it has potential analogy to other areas in natural science. And for us, in particular, it's a natural road into granular mechanics. So how does that work is basically the outline of my talk. If we measure the penetration depth d, little d, this gives us a direct measure, a very simple measure, of the depth average force that the ball experiences as it's being stopped by the sand, just by energy conservation. So we measure the drop, that penetration depth versus the total drop distance h, which I'll make a distinction. It's not the free fall distance, little h. Little h tells us the impact speed. If you want to use this relationship here, it's the total drop distance, which is the sum of the free fall distance plus the penetration depth, that tells us the depth average stopping force. So just by measuring those length scales, we get the depth average stopping force directly. Then we're going to measure the impact dynamics. We're going to measure depth as a function of time as it's crashing in the medium. From that, we can differentiate and we can make contact with the acceleration, the instantaneous stopping force, and how it might vary with both the depth and the speed of the projectile. So this is maybe a simple experiment, real experiment, but I think you'll see it poses quite an interesting theory, because if you think about what's happening, there are throughout, at some point during the impact, there are three different potential regions you have to consider during as you go away from the ball. So maybe near the ball, it's flowing very rapidly. Maybe kinetic theory works. Region some distance away, there's probably plastic deformation happening. And certainly, far away, the sand itself is static. And you've got to handle all three things at once. All right, so that's a challenge. Now, to fix the phenomenon in your mind, this is not our regime. We're not working in this regime where you shoot the ball in so fast that it gets buried and produces these progressively more dramatic jets upwards. This is not our regime. We're not working in this regime where the ball gets buried and you have a jet. We're working in the regime where the ball doesn't get buried. It's a shallow impact. And we're just going to look from the side to see where the ball is. Okay? So when the ball gets buried, we can no longer see the ball, and we stop taking our data. So that's our regime. Shallow impact. Here's some data. So this is June O'Hara's experiment. So what she did, she took a bunch of balls, a bunch of diameters, a bunch of densities, dropped it from a bunch of heights, measured the diameter and the penetration depth. And here's a plot of her data where all those into just one material, actually two materials, glass beads of two different sizes. And what she found is what was seen earlier for the diameter, which is that the diameter scales as the 1/4 power of the energy loss. This is what the geophysicists call a gravity-limited scaling of the characteristic size with the energy of the... So when we make such a plot versus the total energy loss, you see our diameter data collapses very nicely. That 1/4 power law. But what you see also is the depth data does not. The penetration depth does not at all collapse. So the depth and the diameter are different length scales. Furthermore, the depth is not a simple function of the energy loss of the object. And the power law, if you want to fit a power law to it, looks to be different from the power law with energy loss, well, with drop distance, than the diameter. So this looks like a 1/4 power law. This looks like a 1/3 power law. Let me show you some more data on that. So we repeated this. Actually, Mike Ambrosio and Chris Santori repeated this measurement. And here's their data. So this is a series of wooden spheres of different diameters. Bottom plot is a series of different kinds of spheres, but all 1 inch. And what you see again is we have a nice power law of the penetration depth with the drop distance, total drop distance, capital H, which looks like power law. Okay. So now what we're going to do is we're going to take these fits, basically the coefficients of these fits, right? The penetration depth divided by the height to the 1/3, that's what these lines represent, and plot those coefficients as a function of, in this case, the sphere diameter, in this case, the sphere density, and see how the penetration depth scales with those parameters of the projectile.
What were the differences between the bottom?
These? Yeah. Hollow polypropylene up to tungsten carbide. They just get progressively denser. Okay, so what we find is that the penetration depth is also a power law in the diameter of the projectile. It goes like a 2/3 power of the diameter of the projectile, and the 1/2 power of the density of the projectile. This result is nice. It actually, since this is now dimensionally correct, life penetration depth scales is this combination of diameter and drop distance that has units of a length, so it's dimensionally correct. We seem to have captured most of the physics there. So those two results reinforce each other. These two exponents reinforce each other. This one actually is what people see for of a liquid jet into another liquid. Scales, that how far it goes in scales with the square root of the density of the object. Okay, June also is varied the nature of the granular material. So each of these points represents a different material. We're plotting it versus the tangent at the repose angle, which is something like a friction coefficient. And we see, well, we have a pitiful range. We can vary the tangent of the repose angle by a factor of 2. Okay? And at the same time, the density of the material is changing. You can't hold one fixed and vary the other. But we see basically the same dependence on the grain density and the tangent of the repose angle. It goes like the combination of density times repose angle squared, some function of that combination of materials properties. And this depth dependence then actually will give you a depth average force that's in fact proportional to the friction coefficient. So that's a fine result. Okay, so altogether, here's the Uehara law for the scaling of the penetration depth of basically everything in the problem. 1 over the tangent of the repose angle, ratio of densities to the 1/2, and this combination of ball diameter and drop distance. That collapses all of our data. So things to point out, we did this for beads of different glass beads of different grain size, makes no difference. That doesn't enter into the formula, we'll see. Gravity doesn't enter into the formula. Gravitational acceleration plays no role in this formula, right? I'm expressing it versus drop height. So if you were to do this on the moon, it might hit with a smaller speed, but the material itself is less strong because it's being held in place by gravity. I predict it would go in as far. Gravity plays no role in this. There's no room for air. It's got all the right dimensions. If you tell me air is important, we'll have to find some other physics to cancel out the units of whatever physical properties of air you think are important.
Although that sounds deep, is that comment about D actually trivial because you lack other time scales at which you could rescale the velocity and time?
Well, conceivably, there could be time scales in air properties, for instance.
Okay. But in vacuum, there's no way around that.
Sounds right.
So clearly, if you drop it from very high, in vacuum, you can reach certain velocities. You're talking about a certain range of time.
Right, he's talking about...
Correct.
There's still a people...
Correct. Okay. So you can rewrite this scaling law as follows, just in terms of the minimum penetration depth d0. Interestingly, the force law proposed by Detlef's group from their experiments has the same basic form, just with a different exponent. Remember, what he did is he took a ball, he stuck it on the top of the sand, zero impact speed, let it go, It got buried, it went to some depth, and he was able to model the dynamics just by Coulomb friction. He didn't measure depth as a function of drop height, but the prediction of this law is similar in form to the prediction we find. Okay, so there's one potential force law. Actually, over the years, there have been many force laws used to describe impact. Let me just show you some of those. So going way back, here's one that's still in use today, the so-called Poincaré law. So what you say is that the stopping force is a constant plus a piece that depends on the square of the speed. So it's like an inertial drag. Similarly, if you use a kinetic theory, you'll get something that goes like the square of the impact speed with some predictions for what the coefficients ought to be. Sigge tried to use this to describe the jet height in his experiments. Harry Sweeney's group saw that the force, well, the acceleration seems to be constant. Okay, so the stopping force, they say, is constant. But with a curious piece here, it's a constant, but it somehow knows what the impact speed is or the penetration depth is going to be. That gives you an acceleration. Constant acceleration is proportional to the impact speed. John De Bruyne's group has measured, well, they measured depth, basically the same experiment as ours, but for deeper impacts. And they think that it can be modeled by a force law that looks like a Bingham plastic. So there's a viscous drag on the object. Well, I can rule out all these laws a priori because I know what is the depth average force. It must be consistent with final depth being like drop height to the 1/3. None of these laws work, so we can rule them all out. Here are a couple possibilities for force laws that are consistent with those depth average forces as we know them. Here's an ad hoc possibility. Just say it's going to be some power of depth and speed. Simple but ad hoc. Well, if you want to recover this force law, the exponents for the depth and the speed must be connected. And there's potentially a family of curves or a family of force laws which could do the job. There are some specific possibilities. Here's a better possibility suggested by Lev Simmering. So he said, well, if you think about it, I like this inertial drag piece, okay, like from kinetic theory. And the static piece must be something like Coulomb friction, so it ought to depend on the depth of the object and the shape of the crater around the projectile. So instead of having a constant, we're going to have a piece that depends on depth. And he argues that for small depths, it ought to go quadratically in the penetration. For large depths, it ought to become a constant as the crater shape becomes more or less constant. Yes. That's right. Yeah, the acceleration is not constant. I'll have more to say about that later. Okay, so we're going to measure dynamics now. So if you think about it, it's a one-dimensional problem. We don't need to use a high-speed camera. We can just arrange for the ball to block a sheet of light. The amount of light that passes and reaches our photodetector is a direct measure of the position of the object. I don't need to do imaging. I can just measure a single quantity. I can read out this with a high-speed analog-to-digital converter and deduce the depth as a function of time very accurately, very, very quickly. Well, we've done this. This is work done by Mike Ambroso. We've done this for two different ball sizes and a range of drop heights. Here's our data. So what I've done here, taken all of Mike's data and scaled the penetration depth by the final depth. So as time goes on, it starts at 0 and goes down to -1. And I've scaled the time by the impact speed and the penetration depth. In other words, by the time it would take to travel distance d at constant speed v0. So by construction, my data starts at 0, decays to -1 with slope -1. Okay. So the only question is, how does it peel away from this line and crash into this line? That's the only question. And what you see is, first off, it's not constant acceleration. Constant acceleration is this heavy curve. So, as you were saying, that's what was observed by the Swinney group, constant acceleration. We don't see constant acceleration. Acceleration is definitely not constant. Acceleration is getting slower. It's a decreasing acceleration. Acceleration decreases with time. What you can also see from these other curves is that we can't get a good description of this by this ad hoc power law force rule. But the best you can do is this intermediate case, depth to 1/2 times speed. It gives a gray line, which probably, I don't know if you can see, it's below the data here, it's above the data here. It's about the best you can do with that force law. Well, maybe it's okay. Maybe you're unhappy to rule it out, but it's certainly not great. But that's the best you can do with that force law, that ad hoc force law. But I think we can do better with a modification of the Poncelet law along the lines suggested by Lev. So what Lev did is he argued particular constraints on this force law, what it should do at small depths and large depths. What we're going to do is we're just going to say, okay, let's just find what force law F of Z would exactly reproduce this observation of penetration depth scaling with total drop distance. So we can solve that. Here's our prediction. What I can say is that if you expand this, you'll find that the static piece to the stopping force is more or less consistent with the constraints argued by Lev. Namely, it's quadratic for small distances and approaches the constant at large drop distances.
How do you stop it? What problem do you solve again?
I'm going to ask what function f of z do I need to recover this force law, this penetration depth scaling. That's the problem. Okay, so we've got one parameter to vary, this inertial length v1, and by adjusting that, we can get a very good fit to the data, modified Poncelet law. Okay, so that looks very good. So to recap this force law, there are two length scales in the problem as we see it. One is the minimum penetration depth, which we measured to scale as follows. It's set basically by the ball diameter. That depends on the 3/4 power of the ratio of ball to grain density and the 3/2 power of 1 over the repose angle. This is something we've measured, so we know how this minimum penetration depth scales. How about this inertial drag length scale? Well, if you take the clue from kinetic theory, you expect it to scale as follows, set by some mean free path, the shear rate squared. And if you take the mean free path to be set by the grain size, if you take the shear rate to be set by the instantaneous speed in the grain size, then you get the prediction that the inertial length scale should scale as the ratio of ball to grain densities times the ball diameter. So they're both set by the ball diameter, but they have different dependencies on the densities of the materials. So they're different length scales. That's what we expect. Okay, so there's some unfinished business now. First off, you'll notice that we don't have an explanation for this scaling. This is still as yet unexplained. So where does that come from? Another thing that would be good to do is to test the scaling of its inertial drag length by varying the density of the ball and the sand. So that's in progress. It would also be interesting to think if this model has anything to say about deep impacts. So let me just show you data from other groups. So here's the data from Detlev's group. So he data just for one experiment for dynamics, where you just drop a ball from the surface and let it go in. And what he finds is that the depth versus time is sinusoidal. Well, here's what the Poncelet law says. It's also nearly sinusoidal if you take the inertial drag length to be 3 times the minimum penetration depth. It says it's nearly sinusoidal, and you'll notice it gives exactly the right time scale for stopping. that's pretty interesting. For the SUNY group, now, they say the acceleration is constant. It's not really constant. You can fit a line to it over the central region, okay, but it's certainly curved. And if you vary the inertial length of in the pulse lay model, again, fixing the minimum penetration depth, you get some curves which sort of match Harry's data. Okay? There's more curvature. The acceleration is not nearly as constant in this model as it is in the experiments. But the time scale is just exactly right again. Okay? Comes to rest in about 0.15 seconds. So you can get a fair description by the modified Poincaré law. Paul Umbenauer has some unpublished data where they put an accelerometer inside of a sphere. And again, we can get a quite good description of the data, again, just by varying the inertial length scale. So good description by modified Poincaré. So let me just wrap it up. We measure crater diameter and the penetration depth, and I can tell you how it scales with system properties. And we've got a model for dynamics that explains our shallow impact observation, and I think holds promise for describing deep impacts as well. We may be able to understand all these experiments within the same theoretical framework. Thanks. They're the heroes.
A few questions.
Observation of when bullet crashes against dense gravel media, at least for the part of the collision time, you should expect very a situation where you have multiple collisions and kinetic theory not to be at all applied. So in this situation, you probably should expect some probability.
Well, maybe you have better intuition than I. When the ball crashes in, the flows are actually quite rapid.
Doug, your ratio of the D1 over D0 changed by a little bit for all the different fittings you showed. Do you know any idea where that difference comes from?
Well, it depends on the ratio. I mean, for the forums I've showed you, you know, the rough expectation is it depends on different powers of the density ratio of materials. So that could account for most of it. Also depends on the repose angle. Could come for another part of it.
Have you thought about using slender bodies?
We have. In fact, we've done it. We've dropped in cylinders with different tip shapes. And what we find is that the penetration depth still scales as the 1/3 power of the total drop distance. Seems not to depend on the shape of the tip. If it's flat, if it's pointy, it still goes in as far. As long as the penetration depth is fairly large, if it's very shallow, then point your objects go in further. But if you drop it high, the penetration depth is at least one or two times the diameter of the cylinder. You don't care what the tip shape is. That's the observation. We have, yes. It's in FISREV.
Right here. I have noticed that many craters on astronomical images and on some of the images you produced yourself do not show a circular edge, but shows evidence of a polygonal shape on some of the sides of the trace. Do you have an explanation for that?
No, I don't. In fact, I've not seen that myself. I've not noticed that myself. I'll look. Is it where craters are intersecting or for an individual isolated crater? So here are John's. To me, these look round. I don't. This?
Yes. It's slightly linear around, one or two.
Yeah. This one's slightly cohesive, so it's sort of slumped. So this is what you mean. I guess you say that straight. No, I haven't.
Let me suggest that we resolve that question after that, and that we thank our speaker once again.